First of all, you'll see after each of the prepositions a G or a D or an A. The indication there, of course, is that it's either with the genitive or with the dative or with the accusative. Okay? And then you have some compound uses, and I gave you some illustrations last time, but for an easier way to do it, let's just look over some of these and get an idea. I'm looking at them myself just to get make sure they're correct. Okay. Sometimes I disagree with the scholars. All right, we'll start with number one. That, of course, is hyper. Y'all see it right above the little box. And with the accusative, it means above. Now, I'm going to look and see if hyper can be used with any other case, because generally it has the idea and carries with it substitution. So let me just look a minute here. Wrong one. Yeah, okay. As we cover these, I'm going to give you the other uses so that you can jot them down. You could write them on the sheet, I suppose, but I think you might get cluttered after a while. All right, as far as hyper is concerned, when it is used with the accusative, it means above, beyond, more than, in the sense of it being excessive. For instance, when we refer to when somebody has been subjected to too much heat, we say they are suffering from what? Too much heat. The last is thermia. Okay, be careful how you say that, because if you say hypo, okay, but if you say there's another way when it's under. I beg your pardon? Exactly. Hypo, now notice three, drop down to three. Do you see it? Hypo. That's under. So that's where they got the idea from. When it's too much, it's what? Hyper. Okay? You'll hear people kind of throw those around and they've mistaken them. Hyper is from hyper. Hypo is from hypo. Now listen to this word. Therma is the Greek word for what? For skin, hypoderma, under the skin, hypodermic, is where you get the word from. Okay? Now that's only when the noun that it is in conjunction with is in the accusative. Are you with me? So you'd simply look for, and I'm going to anticipate a question you're going to have. Where will it be found within the proximity? Very, very closely, if not preceding it. In other words, you're not going to have to go to the end of the sentence to find it. It's going to be very close. So you'll find the preposition, then you'll find the noun, and the noun will be in the accusative. It'll be translated what? Above or beyond. For instance, if the word, the Greek word, was dispensationalist in the accusative, what would you call that person? A hyper-dispensationalist. That's where you get it from. He goes beyond the normal dispensational approach. Okay? Hyper-Calvinism. Again, going beyond what Calvin taught. I'm convinced that most Calvinists teach far beyond what Calvin ever taught, but that's beside the point. The word can also imply superiority, but that would be one of its rarer uses. The idea is generally above or beyond in the accusative. Okay, all with me on that? Now, when the noun is in the genitive, that's where it's used on behalf of, for the sake of, or in fact, substitutionary for. The reason why I make this a point is because the King James translators did not have this neat little chart, nor did they have this great book to look up the uses of the prepositions, and therefore they missed most of them. They translated most of the prepositions for. For instance, Christ died for our sins. That's hyper plus the genitive. Okay, the word died then would be what? Well, Christ would be in the genitive. On behalf of us, Christ died. That's the way it would read. It can also be translated with reference to or concerning. Again, it's with the genitive. When it's used in compound, and by compound we mean that it's actually a part of a word. Look, for example, in Acts 17:30. That's in your Greek text now. Acts 17:30. Y'all find it? Acts 17:30. Okay, it begins with a definite article in the what? I see you've memorized those, okay. The men is simply a word so then, or simply in passing. Un is the word for then. Chronos, from chronos, the word for times. Dis agnoias. Remember the word agnoia, ignorance. So then, in the times of ignorance, hyper idon, having he overlooked, literally is how it should be translated, he overlooked or looked beyond. The word idon means to see. The word hyper there in compound means beyond, so above or beyond. Okay? That's how you would see it in compound. In other words, it's a part of the word. As a matter of fact, that's okay, let's not concern ourselves right now with that. Because we're not on that one. There's another one there I wanted to show you, but that's not the hyper concept. All right, so hyper plus the genitive is on behalf of, for the sake of, or with reference to, and therefore the principle would simply be the idea of substitution or having a reference regarding. With the accusative, it's above, beyond, more than, and in compound, it means over or beyond. Now, having those two, you can put these down. It's only found in the genitive and the accusative. There is no dative modification for hyper. In the genitive and the accusative. Now you understand, the prepositional spelling will always be the same, hyper. Okay? So don't look to the word to see whether it's in the genitive or the accusative, it's the noun that would be in the accusative or the genitive. This is always spelled the same. Okay, what do they have for the second one? Epi. That's number two. That's right under it. You all see it? Okay, with the genitive, it means upon, as you have it there. It can also mean at the time of. So it has, it carries with it the idea of time. With the dative, it carries with it the idea of place. With the accusative, I hear you have it used in all three cases. It carries with it the idea of to, that's T-O, at, and upon. For instance, I could use it three ways in one sentence in English. Let's see if I can do it. I will meet you on the corner, okay, on the corner at 9 o'clock, on and at, upon a bench. Good. There you have it. So I've given the place factor, the time factor, and then where I'll be, or up on a box. Upon a box. Could be the same thing.
Does that mean that you would use the word three times?
You'd use the word three times, but each time you'd use it with the corresponding case. For instance, the time factor would be in the what case? The genitive, right? The place factor would be in the dative. And the resident place would be in the accusative. That is where I would be. I'll be at the corner of, at a certain time, standing on a box. So you'd have the time, genitive, the place, dative, and the box, accusative. Okay? So you can see it's pretty exact. Whereas in English, you could say, I'll meet you at. You only have three words, and there's no difference in the spelling, right? I'll meet you at 9 o'clock. Well, 9 o'clock would be in the dative case. Excuse me, it would be in the genitive case in Greek. And then on the corner of 5th and Hope, that would be the dative, and then standing on the steps of the Church of the Open Door, that would be the accusative. All right. Then in compound, it can mean upon, from the standpoint of place, or it can also be used in the perfective sense. That is to say, no one, a translation from Matthew 11:27, no one fully knows the Son except the Father. The word fully is hyper. Is epi. There are other meanings as well, by the way, but we won't deal with those. Epi.
Isn't that the one that you talk about as being an intense fire?
All prepositions are. That's the interesting thing about them. Prepositions tend to intensify their nouns that they're modifying when they're in compound. And then if you want to intensify it more, you add another preposition to it. There's one Greek word in Ephesians 4, I believe, that actually has three prepositions in the word. Since I mentioned it, let's go to it. Let me find it first, and I'll make sure that I give you the right address, so you can pity it correctly. Yeah, there it is. Ephesians 3, verse 20. See if you can find it. Ephesians 3:20. Ephesians, by the way, is Ephesios. It's the seventh word in the sentence. Ephesians 3:20. You see it? What are the prepositions? Hyper, ek, and peri. So you think that's an intensified word? You better believe it is. And you know how it's translated? Exceedingly abundantly. The interlinear translates it superabundantly. The idea is abundance. All right, now put the carry with it the idea of hyper. Far beyond abundance. Ek. Not without. Way out. Okay? Ek. And it's a legitimate term. And then peri. Around. So what you have there is as far out, all around, and above abundance. Now you see, a Greek would understand that with all those prepositions, but you have to use all those English words to describe it. He would know that you're on super, super, super abundant ground. And the word abundant by itself carries with it the idea of. So this is really the way in which Greeks make normal nouns superlatives. Okay? Make them super, super types by adding prepositions. For what it's worth, I don't know of any other words that has three prepositions in it, but I suppose I keep finding this one all the time. I remember the first time I saw that. Man, I couldn't wait to teach it. I got up there and I went through the whole idea of prepositions, and I taught hyper first, and then I taught ek, then I taught peri, then I put them all together and someone was yawning. They missed the whole point. Went right over their head. Okay. Anything on epi? Where is three? There it is. Epo. Meaning under. Now that's when it's in the accusative. Let me find epo. It'd be nice if this corresponded with that, but it doesn't. Okay, the general meaning is under, and it's the opposite of what? Hyper. If hyper means above, then epo means under. Tasso is the Greek word for subordination, or be subject to. Hypotasso, meaning under subjection, and that's the word that's used for the wife being subordinate to her husband. Wives, obey your husbands, hypotasso. It's also used for the master-slave relationship in that context, of course. Not that I'm suggesting that's the same relationship in marriage. Don't think the average woman would buy that. Okay, ipo, under, the opposite of hyper. With the genitive, now that's when it's used with what? The accusative. With the genitive, however, it means the agency by which a thing is accomplished. And there it is translated by. For instance, in Luke 21:24, it says, Jerusalem shall be trodden down by Gentiles. That's the agency that God would use to trodden down Jerusalem. Okay, the by there. If you want the two words that the King James translator used throughout, for and by, they figured that's it. Very rarely did they translate it through, and obviously, I don't know of any place where they translated instrumentally by means of, and that we'll see that later in other prepositions. With the accusative, it means under, and that, of course, is what we've seen so far. In compound, it means under. So it really doesn't change in any way there. So the basic meaning of the word is under, with the exception of the genitive. There you don't have a dative use. The fourth is para, and that is with the dative and the accusative, and it means beside. Having to do with standing alongside of, beside one, some one, alongside of, okay? It can also carry the idea of having been sent from someone. In other words, they were here. Notice, here's the idea. They were para, and they were sent from us. See, they were alongside of us, stood side by side, in other words. But the basic meaning is simply beside. With the genitive, it's beside. With the dative, it's beside. With the accusative, it's alongside of. The genitive connotation carries with it the idea of from beside, whereas the dative connotation generally means that the person is with them at the time. Okay? Genitive use, from. Dative use, at rest, beside. If there were two people standing side by side, which one would I use? The dative. If I said someone was sent from him to us, I'd use the genitive, because they were standing alongside of them. And by the way, that doesn't necessarily mean that they were standing side by side. But it means a close proximity of. That's the word that they use for association. Now, if there's motion involved, you use the accusative. For instance, in Matthew 15:29, it says, Jesus passed along the Sea of Galilee. Or, Jesus passed by the Sea of Galilee. Better yet, it's para with the accusative. Jesus passed alongside the Sea of Galilee. See, if you say in English, look up here a minute. If you say in English, Jesus passed by way of the Sea of Galilee, give me a way so you could translate that. Sure, he used the sea, by way of the Sea of Galilee. That means he took a ship. Right?
Another one would be, he just stood by it. Another one, the way it's used here, he walked alongside it. Okay? In other words, this would carry the idea, Jesus went by the Sea of Galilee. Here's Jesus. Here's the Sea of Galilee. Boom, boom. There's by. Jesus went by the Sea of Galilee. Started here, got a boat, and ended here. Jesus went by the Sea of Galilee. He followed the shoreline all the way along. That's the one that is implied there. Why? Because it means he went along the Sea of Galilee. The idea is he followed its path. Yes? If he was standing by it, yes, you'd use it with the dative. Yeah, the dative would imply that he was by it, and he's there now. He's just standing there alongside it. Okay? Then if you come along, then you're also dative. And if you left from there, if say, and I'm the writer, and I say, Jesus left from me, para me, that means he was here, standing alongside of me, now he's gone. And he journeyed by the Sea of Galilee, by the path, alongside of. So he followed all the way down. That would be the accusative use. So you see how precise it is. Whereas in English, bye, bye, bye. And that's what happens too often. Bye, bye. Okay. Any question on that? Para. Obviously, you're not going to remember all this, but I'm just trying to show you how beautiful the language is structured. Five, I'm going to jump. Amphi, because that doesn't appear that often. I'm going to give you the ones that you'll see considerably. Six, pros. It's outside the circle. With the accusative, it generally means toward. Pros. This is the opposite of apo, which is from. This is generally translated to, carrying with it the arrow. Apo is generally translated from. Apu, by the way, is the interrogative in Greek. And if I ask a question, apo pu, irthes edo, from where did you come? The implication was, where were you born? It's kind of an idiom. Pu genithikes, where were you born? Where were you genesis? That's the word. Genithikes, okay? Apo pu, from where? Pros, meaning in the presence of, toward somebody, and you can even translate it from the Greek prosopon, which means in the face of. So what they've done there is they've taken the Greek preposition and made a word out of it, and so when you're prosopon ton prosopon, you are literally in the presence of that individual, and that's why it's translated face to face. Absent the body, prosopon ton theon, face to face with the Lord. Pros meaning then in the presence of, toward. Now that's when it's used in the accusative. With the genitive, it has reference to time. Excuse me, my mistake. Don't write that down. Cross that out. With the dative, it means at. Pros. Tomb. Okay? You see, now you're beginning to... But she was also doing what? What would you even imply? She's standing at the tomb. She's facing it. You see, you're carrying with it more than just simply proximity. That would have been taken up in the other word that we studied before. In para. She wasn't standing alongside of the tomb. She's there. She's actually looking, facing the tomb. Okay, from this word pros. And it's not a matter of proximity. She's there. And if somebody comes alongside of her, that person is para. And if she says, you are with me, that is metta. Okay, we'll see that later. The Greek mind, by the way, has no problem using all these prepositions, just like you don't in English. You say, well, how will I ever learn these? Guess. Yeah, memorize them. But what I really would like you to do is simply memorize the basic forms. And the basic forms are the ones that are on this chart. So you might want to make up a little chart. Matter of fact, that's your assignment for next week. Make up a chart for prepositions. Not a circle and squares and so on, but put a primary meaning for hyper is above, with the genitive, da-da, make your own little text, in other words. That's what you're doing now, but make it in a kind of a way so you can post it somewhere and keep looking at it. So pros, then, generally means at, toward. It can also be used as the equivalent of an indirect object in English when translating it, as the preposition to would imply. But see, you do that differently in Greek, don't you? You use what case? The indirect object, the dative. Can also be used regarding reference. When used in compound, it means toward. And can even carry the idea of addition, in addition to. In other words, numerical addition. He added this also to all the rest. And the added to is pros and then the noun of the verb. Compound. By the way, saying that, compounds can be either what? Nouns, prepositions, verbs. You can add them to whatever. But when you're looking to see what the case is, when it stands alone, you look to the noun. Why? Because verbs don't have case. Pros. Just for, since it's the opposite thereof, let's jump over to the other side, to 10, where it's apo. You see it? Apo. That means from. I already gave you that in my illustrations, but at least this will give you an idea. Apo, then, with the genitive, is the opposite of pros. It means away from the standpoint of separation. It can also mean from as a principle of source or derivation. Now here's a good one, because it's only used in the genitive. There's no dative or accusative modifiers with this. So apo is always in the genitive. And even in compound, it implies separation. For instance, listen to the word excommunication in Greek. All right, the Greek word for an assembly is called what? Synagogi, synagogue. Okay? Apo synagogi is excommunication. He's been what? He's been separated from the church. Okay? Now, apo stelo, to send from the source of, that's the word for apostle. That's the verbal form of apostelos. Apo stelos. See? Get it? See how they do it? So with the genitive, a general means away, or from the source or derivation of. They were in our presence, pros, and they went from us, apo. They climbed a high mountain far above sea level, iper, sat upon it for a while, epi, then slipped and fell and plunged into the water, ipo. The man that was standing beside me, para, jumped into the water, is, and got him out, ek. Okay? All those prepositions. Because they were afraid he'd be in the water too long. N. Sorry. And then the man said, you have saved my life, and on behalf of me, Iper, you risked your life. Got it? Any question on apo? Apo meaning from. Now let's get the three that involve in and out. Is, number 7. Let me try to simplify this for you. Is would imply, you'll hear, the theme calls it ice, by the way. It's is. And is meaning that think of it this way. I'm approaching a door, I'm opening the door, and I'm beginning to pass into the room. That's is. Once I'm in the room and shut the door, that's en. And then on the process of going out, okay, and then when I get out, that's ek. That's why they have that little box there. I like that. So is is not in, but into. Here's the way I used to teach it. You have two mountains, and you have a bridge going across. In the process of crossing the bridge, that's is. Once you get here, you're in the mountain, literally. That's en. Right? Then you leave there and go to another place. That's ek. In the process, though, of crossing from here to another one, you could use is again. Because I'm going to another place. Into another place, see? But you could also use to for place as far as sphere. That would be the location thereof. This talks about the more or less the process. The means by which you get from point A to point B. Mountain here to mountain there. Funny looking mountains, but nevertheless. Sufficient, I think. Here's another good one. You're at the beach, and you put your foot in the water to see if the water is cold, and then you start going in, like I do. I'm cowardly, because I don't like cold. and you're up to your ankles, what word? Somebody says, where's John? He's in the water. Not really. N would be I'm in it. But I'm what? I'm east the water, right? And then while I'm in and I'm splashing around, I'm doing, in other words, there's my place now. That's N. And then I come out, that's Ek. All right, east is accusative. N always takes the dative. And Ek with the genitive. Via is the next one I want you to see. It's number 12. Dia, for lack of a... Via, okay? There are two basic uses, the genitive and the accusative. The genitive is through the agency of. The accusative is on account of. I'll show you a perfect use of the mistranslation of this word. Romans 4. Romans 4:25. Now, I want you to analyze this in English. I'm going to give it to you in the King James. Okay? Listen to it carefully, and then tell me what this is implying. Romans 4:25, who was delivered for our offenses, okay, and was raised again for our justification. The last part of it, listen to it again, and was raised again for our justification. On the basis of what this says in the King James, what is the basis of our justification? The resurrection. Raised again for our justification. Right? It's wrong. We're not justified because of his resurrection. We're justified because of his sacrifice. So then the verse is wrong. You know why it's wrong? Because, again, the King James translators came up with for. They didn't know what to do with it. Here we have via, okay? And it should have been translated. It's via plus the accusative and therefore should be translated. And he was raised again because or on account of our justification. Does that change it? Sure. That means we were justified by some other means, and he was raised because his job is done. Changes the verse drastically. This is why I get so annoyed when I hear people say that the King James Bible is inspired. What'd they do with all those Greek prepositions? Okay, so dia, through. It would be translated by means of. or the accusative, because of. Yeah, I think I'll give you one more for now. We've got many to study because I'm thinking of the verse. You remember in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, before Paul starts talking about the Lord's Supper, he says, for a woman that has short hair or shaven hair, it's a shame to her, but a man who has long hair is a shame to him, doth not nature itself teach you that it is uncomely for a man to have long hair. That talks about the woman's covering. And it says her hair is given for a covering. There's our old friend for again. You know what the preposition is? Anti. Okay? Anti. Now you say, what on earth? Anti is like anti. All right, against. Her hair is given against the covering? What's the whole idea? Someone has translated that her hair is given in lieu of a covering. Another translates it, and here's an argument, that her hair is given for the purpose of being covered. Okay? That's where the hat business comes in. And some pastors are very, I know one in, who's in categorical circles, makes all his women wear coverings. Now, I came out of the Brethren, and all our women wore coverings, and we use that verse. But I can't really support it with the Greek preposition anti, because it could also mean that her hair, in fact, is like the covering. Her long hair is a covering, and anti indicates that. So you have to be very careful with prepositions and how you translate them. And what does the covering imply? Authority and subordination thereof. And so the woman's long hair is supposed to picture her what? Her subordination to her husband. Just as it is difficult to translate auntie in that passage, it's equally as difficult to translate the word long. What does that mean? Long. How long is long? And how short is short? Well, we know that a woman shaven is shameful. But you also have to take that in light of the ancient world where they shave the heads of women who are women of old repute. That was one of the signs. You saw a bald or shaved woman running around, you know that she was a hooker that was caught. That's why it was shameful. Well, now, I've known women that had their hair clear down to the floor, and they weren't subordinate to anyone. I know other women that have rather short hair and are perfectly subordinate. Well, what's the whole idea? It's got to be just that much longer than her husband's. That's it. And if I don't get a haircut soon, somebody's going to wonder who's the subordinate in that family. It may not bother you, but it certainly bothers me. All right, so that's anti. So what have we seen so far? Hyper above, epi upon, en meaning in, ipo meaning under, para meaning alongside of, pros meaning toward or in the presence of. Eis meaning into the process of. En, meaning in, I think I gave you that again. Ek, meaning out. Apo, meaning from. Via, meaning through, or by means of, or because of. That's a good place to stop. We'll cover the rest of them next week. You've got enough. Many, many prepositions. A what? Yes. How many do we have in English? Two? Prepositions? 40? Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, that's okay, yeah. Yeah. I'm just thinking of the basics. To, by, for, those. Okay. And, of course, obviously, each preposition introduces a prepositional phrase. And that phrase stands and must be then analyzed within itself. When it's in compound, it really changes. That's its use, like Mark suggested, the intensified use. When you start throwing prepositions in. Gnosis, see? Knowledge. Epignosis, it's together. Compound. Full knowledge. Get it? Okay. Any questions on that? Make up your chart. Next week. Let's pray. Thank you, Father, for these things and understanding that we can have, again, so that we might use thy word more effectively, being workmen, properly handling thy truth. Dismiss us now in Christ's name. Amen.